Hi, I'm Joey Fatone. You may remember me from the musical boy band NSYNC. This is a special interviews. Some informative stuff going on here. Some interviews that took place recently. And I thought we'd group them together and just see how much we could pick up from this thing. So here we go.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing. Whatever.
Grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Good morning.
Hi, Teresa. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you. Teresa Sharn is Associate Vice President, Personal Lines Product Development at Nationwide. And we're talking about one's daily commute, which can be exhaustive and somewhat dangerous sometimes, especially during rush hour. What actually happened? What are the sobering realities involved here?
Yeah, as your listeners are experience every day, you know, the morning and afternoon commutes are riddled with traffic congestion. Mm-hmm. You know, people are trying to get to work, trying to get to school, they're trying to get to daycare. They're doing it all in a hurry. In the evenings, they're doing the reverse with deadlines, and with the Nationwide Smart Ride data, we're able to really see these traffic patterns and understand what driving behaviors are leading to accidents. And we absolutely see more aggressive driving occurs during the morning and evening rush hours.
Yeah. Are there certain days of the week that are worse than others?
Yeah. What's really interesting is that as the week goes on, the rush hours actually become more and more dangerous. So in other words, Tuesday's rush hour is more dangerous than Monday's, Wednesday's is more dangerous than Tuesday's, and all of that leads to the most aggressive driving occurring during the Friday afternoon commute. You know, an example is we see 25% more fast accelerations on Fridays than we do on Mondays.
You know, a concern of mine is technology and the fact that there are tons of things that take our eyes off the road. Even though automobiles are supposed to be equipped with hands-free technology, we don't really use it, and all this texting and stuff really scares the hell out of me.
Mm-hmm.
Has it become more dangerous to drive as a result? I mean, I don't know if that's hard to gauge or not.
Yeah, we absolutely know that distracted driving certainly is leading to more and more accidents. And, you know, when you're in areas that have high traffic congestion, that can lead to even more distractions. You know, countrywide, drivers spend about 15% of their time actually just sitting dead stopped in traffic congestion. So that means, 5 minutes out of a 30-minute trip are spent dead stopped.
Yeah.
Obviously, those are great times for people to really become distracted, and we have a lot of things around us that cause us to be distracted.
And of course, as our infrastructure, roads and bridges start falling apart, you get more construction, which means more delays on top of the traffic, which causes that gets bad. And I don't know, are there indeed more cars on the road than there ever have been before?
You know, today, yes, there are a few more cars on the road. It's starting to, that trend is starting to flatten a little bit. Uh-huh. But, I mean, we all know everybody has more vehicles today than they did, you know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago.
All right. So we know what the problem is, and I guess certain states are worse than others. I mean, I assume that. I assume the urban areas are always worse than the rural areas, I would guess. I don't know. All right, so we know what the problems are, and we feel the frustrations, and I think we see them, too. But what do we do about it is the question.
Yeah, and Nationwide has a program called Smart Ride, where if members allow us to track their driving, either through a mobile app or a small device that they can self-install in their vehicle in about 10 seconds. And with this mobile app, drivers can earn an immediate 10% discount on their auto insurance. But what's really exciting is that after 6 months, drivers can earn up to a 40% discount off of their insurance for safe driving.
40%? That's what?
40%, yes.
Wow. I mean, with all due respect, an insurance company offering 40% discount is kind of amazing. I mean, I don't mean that sarcastically, you know, but you're usually not used to something like that.
Wow. Yeah, and on top of that, mm-hmm. you know, not only do we reward you for safe driving, yeah. we actually have a whole process built around this yeah. to help you become safer drivers. So we give you weekly mm-hmm. reports to help you track how you're driving each week, mm-hmm. provide you driving tips to help you become a safer driver.
Now, this works off the obvious theory that if you're being monitored, you're going to act accordingly because you know that all your actions are being noticed. But the payoff is that you're safer, well, half safer because you are, but also you're saving this up to 40%. So that's the payoff.
Yes, it is. And I think over time, you know, every once in a while people remember they're monitored, but in the end we all fall back into our habits. That's why we work to give you those weekly reports to help you think about driving and think about being safer.
Right. Of course, the problem is you're doing better, but the person who's driving next year coming the other direction doesn't have that program, so we're only halfway there.
We are, but the more patient everybody is, the safer we all are. So if everybody does their part, obviously, and we all live on safer roads that way.
Yeah. Has anybody ever figured out what actually causes traffic if there are no accidents and no merges? That always baffles me that I get to a point on the highway where all of a sudden it's fine, but nothing happened. What's going on? It blows my mind.
Yeah, I don't have a great answer for that one either. I experienced that as well, but yes.
Okay, all right.
That's a hard conundrum to fully understand. But in the end, you know, there's just a lot of vehicles on the road, and when one slows down, we all slow down.
Wow. Hey, let me ask you a question, an insurance question. Can you change insurance companies at any time, or do you have to wait till your policy is reaching the end of an agreement, and then you can change to something else?
You can change insurance companies or change your insurance at any time. So that is absolutely an option. You can choose to move back and forth at any point in time. People tend to do it at the end of their terms, just because that's when you find out your insurance bill and it's the time that you think about it. But you can absolutely do it any time during your policy period.
So why wouldn't anybody at the end of the policy or at any point just say, "I'm going to check it out and see what other companies offer me for similar coverage"? But we don't do that, do we, much?
You know, people are shopping for auto insurance, and I think the great thing about Smart Ride is it gives you a great opportunity to really look at another insurance company and say, hey, you know what, not only does this company thinking about helping me become a safer driver, but I can save 40% on my auto insurance, up to 40% on my auto insurance.
That's pretty cool. Okay. Well, I guess I know everything I needed, and I knew it was bad on the roads. I didn't quite know it was that bad. Are there certain months that are worse than other months?
You know, there definitely are months that are worse than other months. A lot of it has to do with the amount of mileage the number of miles people travel. So, you know, the summer months, June and July, certainly have some of the most miles out there, but October actually is the third highest mileage month out of all the months. So, you know, the more miles we travel, the more people are on the road, and the more accidents that happen during those months.
Oh, and oddly enough, this is October.
It is October, yes.
Right. So this is kind of the thick of it. Okay. Well, it gave us something to think about, that's for sure. And where do we go for more information?
Yeah, to learn more about how SmartRide can work for you, go to nationwide.com and search for SmartRide, or stop by your local Nationwide agent and ask them about the program.
Perfect. Hey, thanks for your time today. I appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you. Have a great day.
Bye-bye, Teresa. Hey, Jim, how are you?
Good, Ron. How are you?
I'm very good. Jim Jenkins is CEO, Universities East, Sodexo, North America. And we're talking about a survey that was performed regarding Generation Z. I got to tell you, I don't know what Gen Z is.
Well, I'll tell you, Gen Z is certainly the most anxious, technologically wired, fluid group that we've seen come through. I mean, this generation is coming to college prepared.
Yeah.
And, you know, ready to make decisions. So universities really need to gain as much insight as they can as it relates to how to retain, attract and retain and graduate students.
Why are they called Gen Z, by the way?
Well, you had the Generation X after the baby boomers,
yeah.
And then you had the millennials, and now Gen Z. So one of those terms out there.
All right, fine. Okay, so, and of course, the Gen Z, quote-unquote, are the people that are actually going to shape the future for us.
Absolutely.
All right. Okay, so where are they, I mean, as far as debt and finances are concerned?
Well, when you look at this generation, they have a lot of concerns, especially in the U.S. One of the most significant findings in this survey is that 45% of them are worried about debt and after graduation, and
sure.
They're extremely concerned about day-to-day finances.
Yeah. They're worried about their own debt because they're going to college or because everybody's got debt even if they don't go to college?
No, I think you see the cost of college has significantly increased in the last few years, and this is putting a significant burden on this particular generation.
They got a lot of significant burdens on this particular generation. So why did Sodexo actually get into this survey?
We've been doing a lifestyle survey on a biannual basis since 2004 in the UK. Mm-hmm. This is the first year that we reached out globally. The goal here is to make sure that we are capturing valuable insights and key trends that we can help universities and our partners, provide differences that are going to allow them to succeed.
Okay. So why do you think this generation would be more concerned and more stressed about the subject matter than prior? Because you've been doing surveys like this for quite some time.
Yes, and I think it's in the U.S. certainly, it's the continuing growing cost of education.
I guess.
And I think that the burden in the past, has been easier from a total debt load with their parents, and now money's just not available. And we're seeing over half say, without financial support, they're not going to be able to go to college.
Yeah, which is crazy. And, of course, that was a political discussion during the last election, which, of course, turned out odd. In any event, I remember when I was growing up, we had savings accounts. We had all different avenues to make money while we were just sitting there and doing our stuff. And since 2008, there's no more savings accounts, really. I mean, you can't make a penny on what you've saved. So do you think it's that shares into the concern about how they can make their money grow where prior generations did have an avenue?
I think certainly that is part of it. I think savings has generally been tougher. And again, the cost of education has outpaced just about any other sector as it relates to what it costs to go to college.
Yeah. Even healthcare? I mean,
I don't know about that. I would assume healthcare is pretty high as
pretty high too. And of course, would there be a point in time in your opinion, I don't know if you want to give your opinion, would there be a point in time when the universities and colleges would say, people can't afford our place, we better come up with ways to give a formal education without these type of expenditures, or we're going to start losing people?
Yeah, we haven't seen that sort of dramatic change in the marketplace.
I know.
You know, but at some point, it probably will come. You know, but at this point, things like, you know, first impressions are so important to this generation. Mm-hmm. They're making half of their decisions based on this first opinion. So, you know, colleges and universities really need to be prepared for that first visit.
Yeah. It's kind of shocking to me that I know that the unemployment rate is quite low right now, but I know that most people that are employed, the higher percentage, their service jobs, standing behind counters and standing in stores, they're not the well-paying jobs. I mean, that doesn't include, you know, salaries. It just includes whether people are employed or not.
That's exactly what this survey is after. Okay, what are those indicators that, and what can colleges and universities do to let students know that this investment in themselves is worthwhile, and it's not going to make them end up behind a counter?
Right, right, which is kind of what has already happened, but we have to turn that around somehow, I suppose.
Yeah, it's certainly different, and we see it difficult. And we see that showing up in the survey, the amount of stress that's coming from, can I find a job, will I find a job, and will it be in the major that I study?
Okay. So so what can people do, do you think? I mean, how do they make a difference?
Yeah, I think for us, in looking at what the students can do is certainly research and make sure that they're going to be in a place where they feel welcome and they're going to succeed. Mm-hmm. For the universities, they need to make sure that it's attractive. Amenities are extremely important to this generation. Okay,
yeah.
Wi-Fi, not just Wi-Fi, Wi-Fi everywhere.
Yeah,
and you know, do they have living accommodations that they're used to, like at home? And do they have the services that they need to succeed?
It's a very difficult time to be a kid. I mean, I was brought up in the days where people were employed as telephone operators. People answered the phone, and that was a whole big thing. And I mean, I know a lot of jobs go overseas, but a lot of jobs here go to robotics and the technology where you don't need people anymore, and that's a challenge in itself.
Sure, and I think you're seeing institutions change curriculums around what's coming in the future.
Yeah.
So, you know, supply chain and robotics and the technical fields are certainly exploding as it relates to opportunities for education.
Yeah. Take just a minute and tell me about Sodexo, who actually performed these surveys.
Sure. Sodexo, 50-year-old company, founded primarily as a food service group. We now operate in 80 countries. Mm-hmm. We have about 425,000 employees. Mm-hmm. Here in North America, we serve 15 million customers a day at 13,000 sites.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the university sector is one of several sectors that we manage, and we have over 1,000 clients in a bunch of countries in universities.
Very good. Okay, where do we get more information about any of this?
Well, you could go to SodexoUSA.com and download the survey, or certainly just in your browser, search University Lifestyle Survey.
Wonderful. You know, it's interesting, not to tout you or anything, but surveys are actually what make differences. When the information like that comes out, and sometimes you're commissioned to do things like that, that does make a difference when the public is aware of what the effects are of what's going on. So thank you for doing these things.
Absolutely. Our pleasure.
Okay. You take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
You too, Ron.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Hi, Lori.
Hi, Ron. How are you this morning?
I'm great. How are you today?
I'm doing fine. Thank you.
All right. Laurie Benton is the Senior Director for College Counselor Engagement, the College Board. And I'm assuming we're going to be talking about getting into college.
Yes, we are.
Okay. It is. Are there particular times of year that are more productive for going through this exercise than others?
Every part of the year is very important, and it really depends on what year the student is in school, whether they're juniors or seniors.
Uh-huh.
So when you're talking about the application process itself, for our seniors, they are in the thick of it as we speak right now. They are submitting applications.
Okay.
They are talking with counselors and visiting colleges. So The time of year is dependent on what year of school the student is in.
Okay. Now, especially for those that haven't gone through this process before, or families that haven't gone through the process, they wouldn't know all the tips and tricks and what the strong points are and what how to make sure that this is the most effective process for them. Are there tips in general?
Oh, absolutely. There are so many tips. And the first tip I have is basically use your resources at school through your school counselor. Uh-huh. But also additional tips include making sure that you plan and plan early. It's important that families have these conversations about school, about the college admissions process, asking questions that are important in order to make the best plan for a student's success in college. And that means questions around majors, questions around location, and, of course, finally, questions that relate to students and financial aid. And so once students have these conversations and talk about these questions with their families, it helps point them in the right direction.
Is the best attitude to look at those locations and universities and colleges that give you the best student aid in that sense, or is it to pick a school that you've always wanted to go to and go for that?
It's about fit. At the end of the day, it's about academic opportunities, it's about social opportunities, and it's about finances. Those are that's the recipe for choosing a college that's best for a student. Yeah. And so, as I said earlier, it's important for students to look and ask those questions in the initial college search. And a good resource, everything is at people's fingertips. A great tool that students can use is BigFuture.org, where they can compare colleges, including costs and opportunities, in order to create a college list.
Okay, good. Now, let's talk about SATs, because, I mean, I'm no youngster here, but I went through this SAT thing and PSAT, and it was always a very daunting, nervous time because I felt like, this is it. What I get here is going to chart my entire life, perhaps. Of course, that wasn't the case, but that's what you think at the time. And it's such a nerve-wracking experience, and most people view it that way, don't they?
They have in the past, but the new SAT is easier for students to show their best work.
Oh.
No longer you have to worry about any SAT words. There's no penalty for guessing. And the new SAT is more familiar to students and more straightforward because the content actually aligns to what is happening in the classroom. So the students are very familiar and comfortable. And so one of the other pieces is that with the new SAT, which is really a game changer for a lot of our students, is our partnership with Khan Academy, which allows students to link their PSAT scores, develop a diagnostic that allows them to create a personalized practice plan. So no longer do you have to go through the books. You actually can be online and get questions that are specific to your strengths and weaknesses. This free personalized practice plan also gives students access to 8 free practice tests.
Oh.
So students have multiple opportunities to show their best work. So it's not our SAT. It is actually the new SAT. So we're very excited about sharing that with students, and students shouldn't think that this is a daunting task. It's an opportunity to show their best work.
Okay. Now, I've heard the phrase test optional when it comes to admission into colleges and universities. What is that?
Test optional, there's some misinformation about test optional, and basically what it means is that schools and colleges accept SAT scores. All schools and colleges still accept SAT scores. Test optional allows students to decide whether they want to submit test scores or not.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, when you want to make sure that your student creates the best profile, that you want to make sure that they have and submit a complete profile that includes test scores, that includes recommendations and essays. So it's important that also students realize that SAT scores are not just about admission, it's about scholarships and honors program opportunities as well that colleges include and review in order to assist students have the best experience at the college that they can.
Okay. Tell me about the AP exam.
AP exams are a great opportunity for students to stand out in the college admissions process. It helps college admissions officers see that students are taking challenging courses. They are willing to extend themselves, yeah. And it's an opportunity to earn college credits. There are 39 courses available that students can take through advanced placement. Mm-hmm. And if a student scores a 3 or higher on the exam, students may be able to earn college credit, which ultimately saves them money for tuition and moves them closer to graduation.
Is there any reason why a student wouldn't take an AP exam under those circumstances?
Not unless it's offered in their school, and there are still some schools that don't offer AP. Yeah. However, it's important that students pursue the most rigorous coursework available mm-hmm. to them, and if advanced placement is available in their school, absolutely, there is no reason why students should not take AP.
Okay. Lori, are the SATs set by the federal or the state or the city or town? Where are they composed and at what level?
Well, students, the SAT is an opportunity that students can take on Saturdays. There are national exams,
yeah.
But there's also
national,
an opportunity in for districts and schools to provide SAT during the day, which is SAT school day. So if a student is unable to attend on a Saturday, many schools offer the opportunity for students to sit for the SAT during the school day.
Okay.
And so it's a win-win for everyone.
Right. But the actual composition of the questions, is that done on a national basis or on a state basis?
Because, it's done.
Go on.
It's a national basis.
Okay.
The test questions are national. We have national administrations because we want to be able to make sure that students show their best work in the totality to other
right.
students who are taking it across the country.
So how would I know in a local school district if they are educating me on a national level?
And so what you need to do is to look at your score report,
yeah.
ask those questions again, work with your school counselor,
okay.
And ask those questions, look at your score report.
All
and
right.
students have access to their score reports through a score portal that's interactive and helps them compare their percentiles and performance both
okay.
nationally and locally.
All right. And then you also have all the pretest abilities, too.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. PSAT is an opportunity for students to take a preliminary SAT and get a feel for what the actual SAT
okay.
involves.
But all this information should be available through their guidance counselor, and that's the way to go, certainly.
Right. And
okay.
then there are some other websites.
Oh, tell me.
BigFuture.org. Uh-huh. BigFuture.org is a great college research app website.
Mm-hmm.
College Go is an app that students can look at. And then finally, SATpractice.org allows students to use Khan Academy.
Great.
So those are three important resources that I'd like to share with families and students.
Great. Lori Benton, we're running short of time. Thank you so much for all that information. There's a lot more to talk about, but go to those locations to get more information even beyond what we've talked about. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hi, Mercedes. How are you?
Good morning, Ron. I'm fine. How are you?
Great. Mercedes Kerr is Executive Vice President, Business Development with Welltower Incorporated. And we're talking about a good thing, people living longer and hopefully healthier as well. But where do we go? What do we do? Where do we live? I'm being overdramatic, but it's part of what I do.
Well, you know, people are deciding to live more and more. They're deciding to stay in those cities where they live now.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew already that as we're living longer, there is a double-digit growth of aging population in these city centers. We wanted to find out why. So we set out to do this survey.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the survey took place. About how long ago was the survey taken?
This was a few months ago over the summer.
Okay, so it's very current. So this is aging in cities, and what did the survey show?
The survey led us to understand that there are about two-thirds of the residents that are living in cities
mm-hmm.
are pretty certain that they're going to have the financial means to live there past the time that they reach 80.
Okay.
They believe that they're willing to... they're looking for services, they're looking for the health care in particular is a very high priority for them. Mm-hmm. They want to be very engaged in their community, so they're looking for amenities such as parks, recreation. Yes. Cities seem to offer that to them most often.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we are trying to figure out how to provide those services to them so that they can age well and age in place.
I would be most concerned if I were in that age group of making sure that there was great medical care surrounding me at any given second.
You know, that was actually the number one priority for the aging population, was access to high-quality health care. And it was a little bit surprising because it was actually, it ranked higher than proximity to family,
if
you can believe that.
Yeah, I can.
But it underscores Welltower's strategy, which is to try to provide these services. And in Boston in particular, I'll have you know that whereas the city actually ranked very high for livability, public parks, neighborhood amenities, and so on, it is a city that is currently undergoing a transformation in healthcare delivery towards a more ambulatory type of setting, and so there's a lot happening in Boston right now along those lines.
Yeah, it's a gigantic hospital city with hospital education centers and universities and such, but Boston is also becoming quite expensive to the point where does an elderly person actually, if they want to live in the city, they literally probably can't afford to.
Well, there are actually, our survey respondents talked about how they felt they really could afford to live in the city. So hopefully that means that they're thinking about it more. I know that as we live longer, we do need to plan financially much more carefully for our later years. But I have to tell you, there's also a lot, there are a lot of offerings for seniors housing, assisted living, and the like in Boston, which offer community settings that are actually much more affordable when you consider that the care and a lot of services, you know, meals, things like that are all included in your monthly payments.
When we're talking about urban areas, are we talking about the city proper itself? Because there are many suburbs that are within 10, 15 minutes of the urban area, which are still quite urban themselves. Are we talking about the greater urban area or specifically the city?
We were actually more focused in the very urban settings, in the city centers.
What
was the primary focus of our study.
Okay, wow, okay. I don't know if I could put up with the noise of the garbage trucks at 6 in the morning, but whatever. No way. I guess when your hearing starts to go, it doesn't really matter.
I think people are thinking that the alternative that they have for public transportation, amenities, social engagement, all of that, I think, makes up for the difference.
It does. You want to stay mentally active, too, other than sitting in a chair, and which is what I do right now, and that's probably not good for me. Anyway.
Well, you know, I have to tell you, 8 out of 10 people declared that it was going to be very important to make friends after they turn 80. And what I like about that answer is that people see themselves enjoying a new phase of life after they turn 80, so they're not actually planning to sit quietly at home waiting for a doctor's appointment. Instead, they're planning to build new relationships and seek renewed purpose and do more.
Well, we all know that's what keeps you young, is being active. I mean, just, or at least mentally thinking that you're active. I mean, that's really the key to it, isn't it?
Absolutely. Social engagement, cognitive engagement, all of those are factors of wellness. And so as we live longer, wellness becomes exceedingly important. And it's not just about doing exercise, which, our respondents really talked about eating healthier, but it's also about those the ability to repurpose your life, maybe even find a second career.
Now, speaking of Welltower, I mean, the big thing now is to live in communities where you are within a blanket of assurance and you're taken care of, but at the same time, you feel incredibly independent.
That's right. And we find that these community settings are actually can solve for a lot of the things that you just talked about.
Yeah.
They can provide a semblance of independence.
Mm-hmm.
There are different degrees of care and service. It also offers all of the amenities that one might need. If you're 80, in many cases, perhaps single or widowed.
Mm-hmm.
And so these are services that we do focus on at Welltower.
Mm-hmm.
We have communities in the U.S., Canada, and the U.K.,
mm-hmm.
and are very proud of the partnership that we have with operators, really best-in-class operators around the country who provide incredibly good care and terrific amenities.
Yeah. So I'm assuming that based on the survey, if the surveys come out consistent enough, that these communities would start taking shape in these urban areas.
They will, and they and many cities need more of them, especially as this in-migration trend is happening where people are moving back into the city centers. We mentioned people are staying longer in the city centers. So we're very focused on bringing that infrastructure to bear and making sure that the services are available for an aging population.
Great. Well, for more information, listeners can go to welltower.com/Aging in Cities survey and get more information there. Mercedes, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you very much.
And take care. Bye-bye. Hi, Whitney. How you doing?
Hey, Rob. I'm good. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Whitney Torres joins us now. She's a solar energy expert from SunPower. You know, solar makes so much sense, but to me it's kind of frustrating. It doesn't seem to be moving fast enough.
Well, it actually has really grown over the last couple years.
Yep.
The industry has grown 20% year over year for the last 4 years. So there's a lot of growth.
There is. I would just think by now we'd be totally solar. But, yeah, when I'm driving down the highway, I see these incredibly large solar fields, which weren't there like a year or two ago. And when I drive in neighborhoods, I see solar panels on roofs all of a sudden, and they're looking very slim and trim.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, Massachusetts has a lot of solar. You guys are actually ranked 6th in the U.S.
Oh.
for solar installed.
Wow, that's good. That's nice.
Yeah.
Now, if one wanted to have solar in their home, what kind of candidate do you need to be? Do you have to be facing a certain direction? What's the deal?
Right. Well, owning your home is the first step. And then you can talk to an expert to determine if your roof is viable for solar in terms of sufficient space and no shading or obstructions. But typically, most people are good candidates for solar.
Okay. So now here's a confusing part. And I know someone should come out and visit because every home is different and all that. But on the average, how much does one save once it's totally set up?
Well, you're right that it depends. It depends on how much electricity you're using and how much your current bill is. Most people can usually see about $100 a month in savings.
Okay. Okay. And that would be on electric, of course.
Yes. That doesn't include gas or
right.
water.
Okay.
Other utilities. Right.
And is there a large setup cost?
No, actually. So, as we mentioned, the cost of solar has come down so much.
Right.
It's come down 67% in the last 5 years,
mm-hmm.
which is incredible. So it's super affordable. But, you know, on top of that, there are a lot of zero-down methods for going solar so that you can start seeing savings right away with no money out of pocket.
Ah, okay. So you're basically setting up in your home your own power generator, I guess.
Pretty much. Yeah, it comes from your roof. It's clean and quiet.
Yeah.
It
doesn't run on electric. In other words, if there were a power outage, would I still have power?
Well, with a grid-tied system, when the power goes out, in order to protect the safety of the workers working on the power lines, the solar system would go down as well,
okay.
and then when power is restored, your solar system would automatically come back online.
So this is a way of saving money and saving the environment at the same time.
Right, yeah.
Okay, all right. Are there any other benefits? Is there a tax credit of any sort?
Yes, actually. So the tax credit is a really important part of it, and it helps people reduce their tax burden. So the tax credit is 30% of the system price,
yeah.
and it offsets your tax obligation. So it really, you know, eases the pain when it comes time to pay Uncle Sam.
Even under the Trump administration?
Well, the tax credit has, several more years where it's viable.
Okay. I hope I hope it's even more viable than that soon. Okay. So I guess the bottom line, Whitney, is why not just have someone come over and see what you've got going in your home and see if you can really take this on?
Exactly. Why not? It's super easy and fast, and the whole process is very uncomplicated.
Uh-huh. The one thing I will say more than any that I've noticed, about 5 years ago, the solar panels on a home roof were rather thick. It almost looked like there were skylights on the roof. Now, I guess the technology has come so far that it is extremely thin, and it just mirrors the roof itself. It doesn't even, there's no real big thickness to it that I can see from the street.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. There have been a lot of advancements in solar over the past couple years, and one of them is the aesthetics, which is really important to people with their homes.
Mm-hmm.
And so panels have definitely become very sleek and slim. You can get an all-black panel that looks really nice, mm-hmm. With very minimal hardware and railing, and very low profile for the roof as well. So
very
that's
cool.
One of the advancements we've seen.
Yeah, I mean, everything's changing, I guess, slower than I would like, I suppose. I want to bat my eyes and open them up, and there's solar everywhere, because it just, I don't understand why there wouldn't be, but I guess there's a process to everything.
Right. Well, you know, right now there's enough solar installed in the U.S. to power over 9 million homes, so it's a lot, and it's been growing every year.
Good, good. Okay, where do we get more information?
Well, you can start your education online. funpower.com/get-started is a great resource. And then we also have a fantastic blog for people looking to start their education and figure out which questions to be asking.
Great. No obligation, nothing like that. They just come
right.
out and they talk to you. Very, very nice.
Yep. It's an education.
Okay.
And why not, like you said? Well, it's so easy.
Yeah. Especially if you're lonely and no one ever comes over to the house. You know, what the heck? You may get some solar power out of it. I don't know. All right, Whitney, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hello, Ron. Good morning.
How you doing today? Isaac C. Flanagan joins us. He's general manager of Canopy. And we're talking about how to breathe easier at home. Boy, can I use that. Right now I'm all stuffed up with allergies and things. So this is good. Yeah. How do I do this? I mean, where do I even start?
Well, the easiest and simplest place to start is to go to canopyair.com.
Yeah.
Our entire reason for existence is to simplify an aspect of our home lives that is typically far too confusing and complicated.
Yeah.
So we've got a lot of educational and informative content there, as well as a very simple mechanism for you to get signed up for air filters. And then you can do once, and then we take care of it from there.
Huh. Now, I know you did a survey recently. What did you find?
So we find that 58% of Americans aren't changing their air filters often enough.
That's me.
24% of them say that.
That's me. I don't do it. I don't do it.
It's most of us.
Yeah.
And you're probably not in this group, but an alarming 24% say that their home air filters have never been replaced.
Okay. All right. yeah, kind of something I don't think about much. Now we're talking about on our system in our homes. Is that correct? I've even got a little air thing in my home, an air purifier. I don't even change that, and I don't even know why it's still running. But
well,
yeah, I'm one of those people, so I need help.
Well, I mean, you take comfort in you're certainly not alone,
yeah.
And it's an interesting thing because air filters, they're one of the few essential aspects of our life that need maintenance, that need changing, but there's no obvious visual trigger, right?
No.
You know when to get a new razor
because
you're growing a beard.
That's it.
But there's no trigger for when you need clean air.
Good point.
Yet this is our lungs. This is the air we breathe.
Yeah. What would be the ramifications if I didn't change the air filter on my system?
So for starters, it's going to increase your energy bills. The Department of Energy says that you can save up to 15% on your energy bill by changing these things regularly. Uh-huh. So your energy bills are going to go up. Your heating and cooling equipment is going to work harder, which will shorten the life of the unit.
Uh-huh.
And besides the pocketbook hit, obviously your house is going to be less comfortable from a temperature standpoint. Dust is going to build up. And, of course, as you mentioned yourself, as an allergy sufferer, like 50 million other Americans, it aggravates allergies, it aggravates asthma. And according to the EPA, indoor air can be 2 to 4 times as polluted as outdoor air,
uh-oh,
and in some cases up to 100 times.
Uh-oh.
So these are just things we don't really want to take chances with.
Uh-oh. Because, you know, most of us that have these heat and cooling systems, we don't open our windows all year. In the summer, we keep them closed because it's hot outside and we got the air conditioning going. And in the winter, we keep the windows closed because it's cold outside and we got the heat going. So those windows aren't open all that much.
That's right. We're spending more time indoors, and due to zoning changes, home construction is becoming much, much more efficient and airtight, and consequently, we're letting stuff build up that we're breathing.
Okay, Isaac, I'm going to make a confession to you. I'm a very, very smart man. I'm extremely educated. I don't know how to change an air filter.
Well, but you're not alone, again, and that's really a big part of our reason for existence, is to simplify this, is to inform people and to educate them. So all you have to do is go to canopyair.com. We've made some great videos, some entertaining videos showing people not only how to change their air filter, but even some of the basics of where in your house to look to go locate where these air filter receptacles might be.
Okay. Do you have to have the model number and all that? Well, I guess I can go to the website, but I guess I'll ask you. I mean, I don't even know where to look. But you're going to tell me watch the video.
So, yeah, I mean, I can tell you quickly that the two places where your air filters tend to be is either on the mechanical equipment itself, which will tend to be in your basement or wherever your mechanicals are, or on those air filter return grills. But watch the video. We make it as easy as possible.
So now you have a service where you can actually do this, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
So again, because there's no visual trigger to remind you, we think the most effective thing for a healthy home and healthy lungs is to have these air filters coming on a subscription basis,
right,
where you don't have to think about it.
Yeah.
It just works. You set it and forget it. And so you go to canopyair.com. All you have to tell us is what size you need, your address, and how often you want them, and they just come.
Okay.
One more thing you can take off your to-do list.
All right. Now, knowing nothing about this whatsoever, how often is it recommended that one changes their filter on their system?
It's a great question. So at a bare minimum, we would suggest once every 3 months. Again, that's what the Department of Energy says you need to do to save 15% on your energy bills.
Wow.
So who wouldn't want that? And then when you think about the following concerns, asthma, allergies, if you have young people or old people in your home, pets, anything like that, if you've got one of those, we'd say change them every other month.
And
if you have more than one, we'd say change them monthly just to be on the safe side.
So it's like every 3 months or not at all in 10 years. Wow. What a span of difference that is. Holy crap. That's amazing. I'm shell-shocked here.
It can start making a difference fast. Oftentimes you'll see that your house becomes less dusty, certainly becomes more comfortable and more pleasant. You look a little bit better, you lose weight. No, I'm just kidding about the last two. But it's certainly much healthier.
Wow. Will I actually feel healthier? I mean, is this actually like causing me like respiratory possibility problems?
Clean air is essential, and it really affects everything that we do. We've seen literature, in fact, just in the last couple of weeks, that says there's a demonstrable impact of clean air on your skin and breakouts and things like that. So it's one of these foundational things, but it's invisible, so it's so easy not to think about.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, I kind of need a canopy thing because I would never remember to do this. I barely remember to do my laundry, much less, and that's an obvious thing.
that's why we exist. We want to create a situation where you make a proactive, health-oriented choice one time, and afterwards you can breathe easy because we take care of the hard stuff and we send you the filter right when you need it.
Now, that's got to be your slogan, go to Canopy and breathe easy. Is that the slogan?
That's one of the ways we like to talk about it.
It's got
to
be.
We try just to focus on the customer as opposed to slogans, but we certainly we like it when people breathe easy.
I enjoy that part too. Well, thank you so much for your time. I've actually learned something that I didn't know before. I did not know about changing air filters and that you're even supposed to do that unless the service guy says there's something wrong with your system and, hey, when's the last time you changed your filter? That's about the only time I'm going to hear that. So thank you for making me hear
this. Well, you'll impress them the next time.
Yeah, well, maybe,
thanks, Ron. Appreciate
maybe I won't need him the next time. Hey, thank you so much, Isaac. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot, Ron. Have a good one.
Well, there you have it. I hope that you've learned something or picked up something from one of the interviews on this interview special kind of thing. That's my goal in life, is to inform. My second goal is to eat. My third goal would be to have sex here and there. I mean, it's not a complicated deal. It really isn't. It's pretty straightforward. I'll be with you again tomorrow. Until then, I wish you peace.